And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Hello and welcome to the show we call Podcast UFO. I'm Martin Willis, your host. And we're coming at you live like we do every single Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard on the Dark Matter Radio Network. You can go to our website anytime during this live show, and you can sign into our chat room and join in the conversation with our guests. Well, we have another interesting show for you tonight, including upcoming UFO news in just a second with Open Minds Radio Alejandro Rojas. And by the way, a number of people have emailed me and really enjoyed that edition of Alejandro. And also, a number of people have said, why don't you get Alejandro to talk about his podcast? Because a lot of the people that listen to this podcast also listen to his great podcast. So I'll ask him to mention that and give the details on it. Our guest tonight is Denise David Williams, and she'll be discussing the life of Dr. John Mack in an upcoming film that she will be doing. So what is going on, Alejandro?
Hello, hello. As usual, there is a lot going on, and I guess we'll start off with a story from today. I think this is a really exciting story. Some Russian scientists, in particular, a gentleman who has worked with the International Space Station. He's their orbital mission chief, Vladimir Soloviev. Hopefully I've got his name right. But anyway, yeah, Soloviev, I think is how it is. But he announced that they believe they have found live sea plankton on the ISS. So this is really important. He says they're not sure how it got there. They think that either A, it kind of hitched a ride. It was on there when it took off, which means that it's been up there for a long time. Or B, that perhaps somehow there are winds, you know, really slight type of winds that can push these things up high enough where they can get to the ISS. Regardless, it's pretty far up there. It's in space. So what this shows is that life can exist in space, that in this zero gravity arena where temperatures are really harsh, there's a lot of cosmic radiation because it's outside of the atmosphere. It doesn't get the protection of Earth's atmosphere, that, you know, that plankton can live floating around in space.
Amazing.
Now, yeah, really incredible announcement. A NASA scientist who Space.com spoke to seemed to be taken a little off guard. He said he wasn't really familiar with these claims. He said that Roscosmos, which is the Russian Federation's space agency, they had not said anything about this. So he wants to wait and hear from them. And he's not sure where this information comes from. But really interesting news that's just starting to hit today. And of course, the implications are pretty staggering.
Well, you know, I don't want to sound all conspiratorial, but, you know, I can get that way. So what if these little plankton guys are like building their own little spaceships and actually doing space travel. Hey, did you think of that?
The plankton itself, I guess, is something that is seen in our oceans. They say it's something similar to what is seen floating on the top of the ocean. So they're pretty sure that it is from Earth. But not only, I mean, to your point in that civilization-wise, not only is it alive, but it's somewhat flourishing, they believe. So it's actually able to exist procreate.
Really?
However,
in space,
plankton.
Wow.
Does that. So, I mean, it's space plankton. So, pretty incredible that, you know, perhaps. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that develops into bigger and more complex life. So,
yeah,
if something like this has been floating around other planets, it could have, you know, developed into some kind of space whale or something like
that. I know. We're going to have space whales up there, and everyone's going to be
cool.
In the Mile High Club and all that, you know. Interesting. Wow.
Yeah, I want to ride a space whale to Jupiter. How cool would that be?
Yeah, like a humpback or something, sure.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. So pretty cool. They
have the little helmets on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is exciting because it really gives credence to the idea that, you know, life could have been seeded from other planets here, or who knows, even life here could then make it to other planets. There are a lot of incredible implications if
it really
is shown to be real.
It really is staggering if you really, really try to wrap your brain around it. Especially that they're living and flourishing.
Yeah, wow. Flourishing on the ISS.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It really is. All right, so what else is – everything's going to sound so secondary after that, but what else is going on?
Yeah, totally. I mean, the rest is pretty normal stuff, but still fun. So this is a really cool one. This is a radio DJ in Amarillo, Texas, named Dallas Chambers. The other day, he captured – video. He says there were a bunch of people pulled over on the side of the road. He pulled over and he got video of this blue dot. Now, in the video, you see the blue dot. You can't necessarily tell what it's doing, but it's a very vivid blue dot, which is interesting. He says it was really zipping around the sky. He says, you know, everybody who was at the side of the road watching this thing was stunned and they didn't know what it was. And he's like, you know, it could have been something remote control, but I'm not so sure. And until someone tells me, you know, I'm going to say this thing's a UFO. So he was pretty shocked by it. He goes to work. He tweeted it. Then he went to work and he also posted it on his work website and everything. So kind of a cool video. But DJ Dallas Chambers out of Kiss FM 96.9. Amarillo, Texas.
Hey, you're doing that almost too good, Alejandro.
Yep, that's my hit radio voice.
Yeah. That's your other life, your hidden life that we're going to find out about you someday.
Exactly.
You're Dallas. Yeah. All right. So I'm sorry I'm making a little fun of the news today. A little punchy maybe I am. But so what's our last story of the day?
The last story of the day. This one you can make fun of, too, because it's Canadians. Canadians are nice people, but they are kind of fun to make fun of.
Hosers.
But, yeah, there you go. Already starting up. But this is a lot of fun because this UFO organization called Ufology Research is ran by a gentleman named Chris Rutowski.
Oh, yeah.
Who you may be familiar with. Yeah, great guy. They released a report this week, and it's in honor of their 25th anniversary. But it's essentially a big report, the Canadian UFO survey, on all of the UFO sightings that they have collected throughout the years. They have collected over 14,000 sighting reports over the last 25 years. So they do some analysis, which is really interesting. They show year-by-year breakdown, and just like the MUFON numbers, 2012 was a stellar year for them. They got a lot of sighting reports. But they have a couple other really interesting breakdowns, such as, you know, when they investigated them, what did they turn out to be? And they had a 13% rate of unexplained. So
right there, normal. It seems.
Yeah, right about, you know, kind of what we see often in these sort of things. So so really interesting. And then they list, of course, a lot of these really cool cases that they've gotten over the years. So that's another story, something everybody should definitely go check out. You could go check this out at openminds.tv. And there is a radio tab at openminds.tv where people can go listen to our podcast, including – you know, one of my favorite guests, which was you.
Oh, that's right. almost forgot all about that. So on podcastufo.com, you will see links that'll go right to the website, right on our homepage during this show. And thank you so much, Alejandro. And we'll be talking to you next week.
My pleasure. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you. So hang in there. We'll be right back with Denise David Williams.
All right. Stay tuned, hosers.
Yeah. Denise, how are you? Denise,
good.
You are. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Are we on?
We are on, Denise.
No. Oh, we are on. Hi, Martin.
Hi there.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
That's fine. It's live radio. So, but anyway, thank you for joining us. We had a couple of technical issues, but we pulled it all together, and here we are. And so I'm excited to have you on the show, and I want you to talk about your upcoming film and also how you got connected with Dr. John Mack, who I have had a lot of respect for over the years. And why don't you tell a little bit about yourself?
Sure. First of all, thank you. Thank you, Martin, for having me on. I appreciate it and love talking about Dr. Mack and the film that we're developing. I have worked in Hollywood for many years as a creative executive, story editor, VP of production, and had the privilege of working with some pretty great writers and directors. And then I formed my own company, Make Magic Productions. And about, it's going on 7 years now, the story of Dr. Mack was brought to my attention in a really kind of mystical way, I would say, and I'm happy to describe it if you want me to. It seems like this is the kind of show that might appreciate it. What happened was my ears started ringing out of the blue. It was kind of freaky. And doctors just shrugged and said, well, we don't know what to do. There's nothing we can do. And shortly thereafter, I started to get a very strong intuitive message, which is not unusual for me at all because I'm highly intuitive and it's something that I respect and have utilized my entire life. And as a matter of fact, it's something that John Mack talked a lot about. Anyway, the intuition said to me to find a medical intuitive. And I was like, what? But find a medical intuitive. Okay. Well, long story short, I found a medical intuitive who was working out of a metaphysical bookstore in Los Angeles. And within minutes of me walking into the store, and she asked me what I did, and I said, I'm a film producer. She said, I got to tell you this story because I think it would make a great film. And I've tried to get the attention of other people, producers, and I couldn't. And I knew immediately. I mean, it gave me chills when she told me the story of Dr. Mack. He had been dead a year, and she had, as it turns out, she had been a patient of his. And that's how she knew him. And so I took this gift that I was given in that exchange with this woman and went researching, and the more I read about him, I was just like blown away. It was like, I cannot believe this man or this story or what a great film this is going to make, and the potential of this film to spark a real dialogue about the possibility that we're not alone in the universe was just, I mean, it was just so exciting to me. So then I embarked on getting the life rights, and that took 4.5 years.
Wow.
So, yeah. And, but eventually I did. I created relationships with the Mack family, and ultimately they entrusted me with the rights. And so, and then what I did with the rights was shop it around Hollywood, because I know, you know, this kind of story doesn't come along very often. And I came up against some obstacles, which were not surprising, but were not something that I was willing to compromise on. So, because I feel very responsible for doing this story without sensationalism, with it being authentic, with it not making Dr. Mack look like a fool, which a lot of people would like him to look that way. And so what we chose to do, myself and my team, was to create a crowdfunding campaign just for the development of the script, which would allow us to use all the personal and professional archives that have been granted to us, some incredible stuff, like some of the abductees have given us their private clinical sessions with Dr. Mack, and a lot of great stuff. We have an unpublished autobiography that he wrote before he was killed. And so the purpose of the campaign is to be able to hire a writer and develop the script in-house and then go back and have it financed in a more conventional way. So that's the nuts and bolts of the project. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where we are with it.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I want to also just for the... It's it's kind of easy for us to assume that everybody knows who Dr. Mack is. And I don't want to go into a lot of detail because most people that are interested in this field do know who he is. But let's just more or less talk about him in general, just for the person that may be listening overseas or may have never heard of him.
Sure. So Dr. John Mack was head of psychiatry at Harvard University. He was a Pulitzer Prize winning author. He was very highly regarded, and he was a scientist. He was real left brain, very materialistic worldview. He was asked to meet with people who claimed to be abducted by aliens. And this was really not something at all in his wheelhouse as a scientist and as a doctor. But these people were really desperate, and they really needed someone to help them. And he became curious what the underlying psychiatric syndrome was to the phenomenon. So he studied over 200 abductees, but he didn't do it at Harvard because he was kind of embarrassed that, you know, he's studying aliens. So he set up a makeshift office in his home. And one by one, they came to his home. He went to great lengths to keep them apart from each other so they wouldn't be influencing each other's stories. And he used everything he had as a psychiatrist. And he even said to his wife, you know, anybody who thinks they've been abducted by aliens has got to be mentally ill. Hmm. But after using his entire psychiatric arsenal, he had a change of heart and mind. And according to his clinical assessment and judgment, these people were not crazy and they were not lying. And this was truly shocking to Dr. Mack. I mean, it really unsettled him to have his worldview that he was trained in his entire life, because by this time he was 60 years old, uprooted and challenged. And so he traveled the world and he met with African shaman and Australian aborigines and other people around the world, corroborated very similar stories. And he came back home and compiled his findings in his best-selling book, Abduction. And he went on a book tour. So now he's on Oprah, Larry King, the BBC, basically saying that aliens were real. And Harvard heard about this and they were mortified. So, you know, mortified, their head of psychiatry was doing this. So they convened a secret committee to try to discredit him, to take away his tenure, and to basically ruin his reputation. And for 14 months, they put him through what amounted to a witch hunt. He was mocked in the press. His colleagues thought he had lost his mind. His wife divorced him. And yet, Dr. Mack stayed loyal to the abductees. He said, there's an authentic mystery here. We can't turn away. And when an African bushman and an upscale New England housewife are telling the same story, we have to take the conversation seriously. And he went on to write another book, Passport to the Cosmos, which really reflects how John Mack changed. He became, by his own words, intuitive, heart-based, spiritual, right brain, basically. He shifted, and his entire worldview changed. And like many of the abductees, he went through a transformation the way they did through their abduction experience. So it's a big story. It's a deep story. It's complex. It's emotional. It's powerful. And I believe it will challenge us to, like I said earlier, have a real dialogue about what so many of us already, you know, believe to be true, which is we're not alone in the universe.
Right, right. The lawyer that up on the chat room, oh, by the way, if you're listening live, we have quite a few people in the chat room. You can jump over to podcastufo.com and join us in the chat room and ask some questions. I'm having a little bit of technical difficulty here, so hopefully I will be able to ask questions, but you can also chat among yourselves. Someone is stating here, one of our regular listeners, past guest, is on the in the chat room, and he's saying that the lawyer who defended him against Harvard, Daniel Sheenan, is speaking at a UFO retreat near Toronto at the end of this month, actually.
Yeah, well, actually, there are two lawyers who defended John. One was Danny Sheehan, and one was Eric McLeish. And they both defended him in different capacities. But yeah, Danny Sheehan is great. He's amazing. And yeah, he helped John out quite a bit.
You know, one of the if the listener out there wants to watch a really great clip on just what a gentleman and how wonderful John Mack was, there's a lot on YouTube. And one that I really like and have paid a lot of attention to and want to have some guests on the show to talk about is in particular the 62 school children, excuse me, in Zimbabwe, pardon me, Africa, that saw the crafts land and the aliens, and how all 62 children just described exactly the same thing, and they were horrified. And if you watch John Mack interact on a YouTube video with those children, you can see what a solid guy he was with them. And is any part of that going to be in your film?
Yeah, it is, because what John was going through the trial with Harvard when he got a call, and they were really, you know, putting him through the ringer, and he got a call from a BBC reporter, his name was Tim Leach, who wanted a statement from John, and John had not, about the aerial school sighting, and John didn't know anything about it. So at the request of the headmaster in Zimbabwe, John got on a plane and went to interview the children, which is what you were just describing. And it's, the footage is astounding. Mm-hmm. It's just astounding how sincere these children are and how uncoached. And the things that they say that was transmitted to them mind to mind from the beings. And John started out as a child psychiatrist, and it really shows in that footage how gentle he is and
right.
working with them. So it's important for many reasons, because at home, while Harvard is skewering him, he's in South Africa basically being vindicated by these children. And it's a powerful juxtaposition.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and I would really love to figure out how to get in touch with one of these children now, because that was back in the 1990s, and they're all in their 20s now. And, you know, it was such a profound incident, and it certainly changed, I don't want to say all of their lives, but most of their lives, I'm sure.
Yeah, actually, they're doing a documentary on those kids.
And does this have to do with, I do have a guest coming up. He was there along with Dominique on site with John Mack. And
Dominique and Randy are doing
Randy is
a documentary.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay, Randy will be on to talk about that eventually. I did meet him, mm-hmm. and he agreed to be on the show, and that will be great. So on the chat room, there was a question for you, and it just says, can you go over the case that stands out the most to you?
Well, there was a guy named Peter. His real name is all over the internet, but just for the sake of this conversation, his name was Peter, and he was a patient of John's, and he agreed to be put through additional tests, additional battery of psychological tests. And his experience was so profound and so transformative. He went on the speaking circuit with John. He was on Oprah with John. He was extremely courageous back in the 90s. If you go to our website, johnmackmovie.com, you'll see a video that he did for us recently, 20 years later. And you know, if you want to know the details of his story, just pick up John's book, Abduction. Because he's a chapter in the book. Mm. Or better yet, contribute at John Mack Movie and we'll give you a copy of Abduction.
Oh, there you go. Is this sort of, you know, maybe I have this wrong, but is it sort of like a Kickstarter campaign you're trying to do here?
Yeah, it's an Indiegogo campaign.
I'm sorry, I'm just not familiar. I have heard about that, but I don't know the details on how that works. And
same thing.
It's very similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so let's say all the funding comes through. Can you go into some of the detail of what you're going to be covering in that?
In the screenplay?
Yes.
Sure. Now, these are just broad strokes. Mm-hmm. We don't know structurally how it's going to be written or even how it's going to end up being edited. But basically, we're going to begin with the years where John Mack starts the abduction research, which was the early 90s, and follow him through the research, through his travels around the world. A big part of it is his conflict with Harvard, his transformation because of the work, his going down to Zimbabwe, and the relationships that he forms with the abductees, and then in 2004 he's killed by a speeding car in London. So you know, that's just a beat, but that in no way does that really reflect, you know, the whole dramatic arc and everything of this piece.
Now, I would imagine for you to get the permission to have the rights to this must have been very difficult, because from what I understand, they are very cautious in what the family does. So how did you get involved and actually get close enough where they trusted you? Did you build a relationship over a certain amount of time?
Yeah, I mean, I tracked down one of John's sons, and I wrote him a letter, and then we had an initial call, and it was him, and there were other people in the room. I remember I was on speaker, and it was a process of gaining their trust, of convincing them that I was, you know, sincere and very protective of John Mack's legacy. And, you know, they just decided to trust me. And, you know, that's no small thing on their part, because John had been dead only a year. And, you know, here I am, I show up, you know, knocking on their door, basically saying, I want to do this story. And, you know, they don't know me. They don't know Hollywood. Not that I'm Hollywood, but this is where I've worked, you know, so that's how they perceived me. And, I mean, I don't know even what that is, Hollywood. Do you know what I mean? It's just a iconic whatever name. But I am an independent producer who works in Hollywood. So, you know, that they were very leery of that, understandably. But I do think that obviously on some level they wanted his story to be told.
I was just going to ask you that question.
Yeah, because if they didn't, they would have never said yes.
That's right, yeah. And it's a story that I think, you know, must be told and not forgotten. And it's fascinating when someone can actually have the courage to do what he did with his stature and, you know, really take that leap to really look into the subject seriously and open-mindedly. And one of the great things I think about him.
Yeah, and I hear that over and over and over again, and I get emails from people all around the world, you know, especially after I do a show like this, and people who've met him or in some way had some sort of experience with him. And to a person, they talk about his compassion, his humility, his kindness, his intellect, his open-mindedness, his open-heartedness, I mean, across the board. You know, but let me say this, you know, we are creating a three-dimensional human being in this film. And so this is not going to be someone who walks on water. He does have his flaws like all of us, you know, and his shortcomings. And that's also what will help make the character interesting. So, but nevertheless, my point was he really is a beloved figure in, you know, to a lot of people.
And, you know, I put a Bud Hopkins up there in kind of, you know, the same realm as, you know, he was also a person that a lot of people really looked up to as well. Of course, he didn't have as much to risk, but he was another pretty solid person really looking into this seriously. And do you mention Bud at all? Is Bud going to be any part of this or talked about in any part of this?
Yes, because Bud was actually, I mean, it began with Stan Grof, who was a transpersonal psychologist, he still is, and he gave John a chapter called Crisis of Transformation, Alien Abduction. I can't remember the title, but he was the first one to bring it to John's attention, and then John and Bud Hopkins met. And actually, it was Bud who gave John a box of letters from abductees from around the world, and he said, "John, you know, to me, they're perfectly sane, but you're the psychiatrist, you decide." Hmm. And that's kind of kickstarted John. He took the box of letters home, and he started going through them. But here's where Bud and John departed. Bud was a literalist. He believed that the experiences were literal and three-dimensional, period. That's where John started out, but it's not where John ended. He, after several years, came to believe that it was more interdimensional. And that's why he said to Harvard, "We need to adapt a new paradigm of reality." And that's why Harvard threw up their hands and said, "John, if only you had told us you had, you know, discovered a new psychiatric syndrome, but you're asking us to redefine reality." Mm. And that's another way that John was different from David Jacobs and Bud Hopkins and many other researchers. He took it into a very spiritual realm. And he felt that the acknowledgement of these experiences would help us as a planet transform in consciousness. So what he did that other researchers didn't was he bridged science and consciousness, which is huge.
We have a guy that is asking quite a bit. Over and over again, John, can you elaborate on the Indigo Kids? Yeah, I never heard you mention that. He's saying you mentioned it.
No, he's talking about the Indiegogo campaign.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think he's got it confused. I don't know anything about what the Indigo Kids are. And
you know what, though? I've heard of Indigo Kids. I know kind of. I mean, I can't speak on it, but I know what he's talking about. They're kind of a special group of souls who came to the planet. And that's all I'm going to say, but I kind of know what he's talking about.
I see. So it's just he picked up when you were talking about the campaign and confused it. I understand. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's move on. But anyway, if you're listening live, you can jump over to the chat room. And I see we have a number of people on there now. If you'd like to ask our guest tonight, Denise David Williams, a question or anything about John Mack, you're welcome to chime in. And when do you perceive that you'll be actually starting to work on this film? Let's just say the funding goes through. Is this something you're going to work on right away?
Well, let me just say I've been working on it for 7 years. So,
wow.
So I won't be, you know, it's an ongoing process. However, when the development money is in place, and we have people, you know, showing a lot of interest, to tell you the truth, who will step forward and help us with that. It's not reflected yet in the Indiegogo campaign, but they are out there. And once we have that in place, the right writer and myself and the consultants who are on board will spend several months crafting the screenplay.
Okay, so I may have had this thing confused when I first was speaking to you. I was picturing like a documentary, but we're not talking that. We're talking a screenplay. We're talking actors and... is that what we're doing? Is that what you're doing? You're making actually a film?
That is correct. This is a major motion picture. This is a kind of film you buy a ticket, you go buy your popcorn, you sit down, and you just have an incredible experience, and hopefully you come out and you are just wowed. It's a real movie.
Oh, my goodness. You know, now I'm really psyched about this. I'm really excited. I would love to watch a movie like that. That is great. So, well, I hope this thing really works out and it becomes a reality. At this point, it's there's a lot of hoops to jump through still, it appears. Yes?
Sure. As with anything that's, you know, big and has value and you know, big endeavor like this. But, you know, it's done all the time. Films are made. I've been in the business long enough to know how to put one foot in front of the other. And it will get done. You know, now, it will get done.
Do you want to talk about some of the other films that you've been involved with that sort of does any of that make any sense to this, or is this totally out of the realm of what you normally do?
It does make sense because my entire experience in the business is working on feature films. I mean, my first job out of USC graduate school, I was basically a fly on the wall for E.T. and Raiders of the Lost Ark. I mean, that was my first job, my first foray. And then I worked at 20th Century Fox and a company called The Movie Company, and I was a director of creative affairs for another company, and then I was vice president of a company. We produced Platoon, which won the Best Picture Oscar and Best Director Oscar. So my training is all in this realm.
Wow, that
big
is amazing.
Big commercial feature film.
You know, I don't understand this same person that asked about the Indigo Children is asking about Hawken radiation. Does this have anything to do with John Mack or anything? Are you familiar with that?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I know that has to do with black holes and all that. I'm not aware of that. John, maybe you should stop asking questions. Okay. All right. Someone is saying when they heard you say the screenplay, they were thinking about the Travis Walton experience and hope that it doesn't go down, you know, the same path as Fire in the Sky. And it sounds to me that you are really looking to keep his story very, very accurate. Now, I have to say that a lot of times people are always trying to sensationalize something because it doesn't seem like enough. I mean, how are you going to maintain that equality where you don't get so tempted to go over the edge and make something more sensational?
Well, I don't know the film that you referred to. I mean, I think I vaguely am aware of it. What was it called? Watchers in the Sky?
No, Fire in the Sky with the Travis Walton incident. The abduction in Arizona back in 1978, I believe it was. It is one of the real solid abduction accounts, that one of the most solid ones out there. And a lot of that story, he was still glad the movie was made, but some things were changed because the producers of the film just wanted to make it more sensationalized and, you know, did a lot of things different than they actually happened. He went along with it. But does talk about how it sort of bothered him quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, the good news is that I'm the producer of the film, John Mack, and I am committed to it being done as a classy, sophisticated, entertaining, provocative, commercial, entertaining movie. It is fiction. It is a fictional film, however. It's not a documentary. So it's not going to completely connect the dots to John's life, but it will capture the spirit of John Mack's life and of the important events that are, you know, relevant to the story. So I think everybody knows what that means. You see a movie like, you know, any picture that's about a real person. Ray comes to mind. I think it was about Ray Charles, right? Or there are any number of them. And, you know, we know when we're moved by them. They may not be detail by detail exact facts, but they capture enough authenticity that, you know, you're satisfied.
Right. Now, Myself and a lot of people in the field are going to definitely line up to see a movie like this. But what about John Doe out there who has never really looked into the subject? What is going to catch his eye to go visit a movie like this?
Well, I think that pretty much everyone on the planet has an opinion about aliens. And I think the facts are 50% believe there are aliens and 50% don't believe there are aliens. But there's nothing better than controversy to help promote a film. And, you know, you could see this film and be, completely against the idea of aliens, but you want to see it just so you can, you know, poo-poo it. And then the other 50%, I just envision them flocking to the theaters to see the subject matter handled in a way that Hollywood rarely handles it, which is, you know, presenting aliens so that they're not, you know, just here to conquer us or threaten us or scare us or take us over. You know, this is going to be much more thoughtful and provocative. So I just see that pretty much everyone is an audience for this film. Okay. You bring it up in a group of people, everyone has an opinion about aliens. It just, like a wildfire, gets going.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned earlier that that he sort of had thoughts of interdimensional. So he had thoughts of that all of these encounters were possibly interdimensional or just part of them. Did he ever elaborate on that?
That they were physical, three-dimensional, and or they were interdimensional because, you know, some of the abductees said that, you know, it's possible just the astral body has the experience. But John Mack said that doesn't make it any less real. Though, you know, the physical body may stay where it is, but the astral body is taken and travels and goes into different dimensions or whatever. The point is it's something we don't really have a language for yet or an understanding of yet. But that doesn't mean that it's not happening or that it's impossible.
So I want to talk a little bit about you and how you became open-minded enough to do this. Did you ever explore any this part of the subject before you ran into that woman?
I really did not put much attention on the subject of aliens per se. However, really from the minute I got to the planet, as I said earlier, I had a very highly developed intuitive nature, and I was always kind of aware of the veil, you know, like what other dimension, what took place behind the veil. And it came naturally to me as a young girl to hear dead people, you know, have dead relatives talk to me and other kinds of beings, and it was very natural to me. So when I heard about John Mack and his story and how he took it into the subject into a spiritual realm, I just said, I'm the person for this job. I can do justice to this story because I understood what he was trying to say.
Now, have you, in your career and in your position, have you received any ridicule about you actually tackling this subject yourself?
Not that I can think of. Gotten a lot of support.
Mm-hmm. Well, you look at it this way also, or I do anyway, is, you know, John Mack himself, here he is, you know, has this prestigious Harvard position, and, you know, I mean, you can't really think of too many places in the States anyway of, you know, unless someone is in politics where they could have such damaging to their career damage to their career as that position. And, you know, it is, that's one of the things that stands out the most with me when it comes to him.
Yeah, how much he put on the line, for sure.
Right.
Huge, huge.
And I understand that he was pretty open-minded most of his life, and something about, I read about his parents or his upbringing was pretty interesting. Is there anything to talk about when it comes
well,
to that?
Well, his mother died when he was 9 months old, and his father remarried. He was brought up in Manhattan in a very intellectual but atheist home. Even though they were Jewish, they were intellectuals. They were not religious. And I believe his mother was an economist. His father was a doctor. You know, education was very important. And he was a left-brain guy, no doubt about it. That was his worldview. You know, rational, materialistic, you know, that was the world that he was raised in and the world that he knew.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know a lot of people have tried to make a conspiracy over his death, which my own thoughts are it was just an accident. Someone was drinking behind the wheel, and it was just an accident. Do you hear a lot about that?
Yeah, people ask about that a lot, and the people like to think that it was a conspiracy and, you know, mull it around. But I agree with you and with the family that it was a drunk driving accident. He was in London. You know, if you've ever gone to London, you know how easy it is to look the wrong way. And
mm-hmm. Right.
He got hit. Mm-hmm.
Yep. A very simple thing that anyone could do. Someone on the message board wants to find out what is your perspective on aliens in the very ancient past?
Well, I only have an opinion, and it's not a very educated one, but I do believe that they have been here from the beginning of our existence. I believe that aliens serve as watchers of the planet and always have and continue to do so. As a matter of fact, one of the very consistent messages that the abductees got was that we need to take care of the planet. And mm-hmm. if we don't, we're going to lose it.
And, you hear that over and over and over and over. And
yes.
Even with those 62 children in Zimbabwe, they said
yes.
that they had the feeling, those feelings that they had never had before, that, you know, we are destroying the planet and we have to take care of it.
Exactly, exactly.
And that's enough to give anyone goosebumps right there, if you
yeah,
ask me.
And one little girl said, they told me that we're getting too technologized. Now, what
yeah.
8-year-old knows how to say yeah. that, you know?
Yeah, we talk about that quite often in this show, how we have the bottleneck of technology to get through where we don't destroy ourselves here, basically.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Another question up on the board. John Mack and Bud Hopkins, did they ever discuss alien DNA and human DNA mixing? In other words, hybrids?
Several of John's patients talked about the alien-human dual identity. That when they were taken and the aliens, you know, that there was some kind of hybrid program going on, and whether that, why, you know, I don't know why, but it's been conjectured that it was, you know, when we destroy ourselves, this hybrid species will be here to be able to, you know, carry on. So John did, again, if you look in his book Abduction, he talks about that. In great depth, you know, like some of the abductees feel that the part of them that was left on the ship is more important or a bigger draw for them emotionally than the mate that they left back here on Earth. And it causes, as you can imagine, a lot of problems in a marriage, per se. you know, for instance. So, yeah, he did address that.
Now, so you've been at this particular project or subject for about 7 years, if I heard you right. And mm-hmm. did you always conceive the thoughts about what you mentioned just a few minutes ago, that you believe that they've always been here and guardians of the planet? Or is this something that you've actually contemplated since you've been looking into this topic more deeply?
I think it's something that I've come to be aware of since I've been, you know, having my attention on this topic. Although I will say, many years ago, I had experience with beings, not alien beings, but beings that were light beings that communicated very freely and openly and with amazing wisdom. That was quite helpful to me at a certain time in life. And I don't know if we would consider those aliens or not, but they were timeless and so I don't know. I mean, it's such a huge conversation, you know, the rabbit hole is so deep, and so it's both, Martin. I've always had an interest in it and somewhat of a connection to other dimensions, but I've learned so much more and you know, recently because of the project.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We had a very interesting question up on the message board. Upon John's death, it is alleged that an acquaintance he was staying with went to the morgue and John appeared to them. When the acquaintance asked about the aliens and what he'd learned from the other side, he was supposed to have said, "They are not what we thought." Have you ever heard that story?
Yeah, I have heard that story. And I don't know about that particular quote, but I do know that several people around the world who are mediums, psychics, whatever you want to call it, including the very first woman who told me about John, have contacted me and told me that they've had direct contact with him since he passed over. And they've given me various messages, not to me, but just things that he has said allegedly through them. And one of the things was that when he was killed, he said it was okay. I was very tired. It didn't hurt. And I'm continuing my work over here.
Wow. Wow, that's pretty amazing. I want you to talk a little. We have about we have four minutes left, and I want you to talk more or less about how someone can, if they're interested in helping you out or talking to other people to help you out. Can you just tell them how to do that?
Yeah, if listeners are moved to do so, and I really hope you are, go to johnmackmovie.com. It's where our Indiegogo campaign is, and contribute whatever you can. And if you're out there and you're listening and you have a larger sum of money that you can contribute, please contact me. We're open to giving a credit on the film. Personally, I really feel that it would be such a privilege to be part of this, you know, in exchange for cash. It's going to be, and it is, an amazing, prestigious project. And, you know, if someone really wants to participate, please email me. But having said that, any contribution is appreciated and very much needed. So, like I said, I've been working 7 years on my own dime. As I develop the script, I still won't be getting paid. And it's really not till we sell the script that I'll get paid. So the money is going right to development. So yeah. JohnMackMovie.com.
All right, very good, johnmackmovie.com. Well, it's been a real pleasure speaking to you this evening. And
thank
wish
you, Martin.
All the luck in the world, and let's stay in touch. I want to definitely be sitting in the premiere of that.
Fantastic. You got it.
All right. Well, that's it for our show today. If you missed any part of the show, You can catch it as a podcast and a whole bunch of other podcasts. And I want to thank everyone for helping out with the show today. Our guest, of course, Denise David Williams, Keith Rowland, producer for the Dark Matter Radio Network, Carrie Lloyd Whitehouse for our music, Peggy Shunning for managing our Facebook page, and remember to like us on Facebook for all the latest UFO news. And Denise, I want to thank you once again. And
thank you, Martin.
And we definitely want to have you on before this movie is coming out. And you can check us out live next week here at the Dark Matter Radio Network. And every Wednesday, this is Martin Willis reminding you to keep your eyes to the sky. And we'll see you next week.